Final case for today is United States v. Moser. Mr. Levinson.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jeremy Levinson. I represent Aaron Moser. Mr. Moser was indicted along with four other fellows, Mr. Royan, Bowles, Balderas, and Taylor, for bank fraud and related charges. Ultimately, each of these defendants pled guilty, I believe, to a single count, certainly Mr. Moser to a single count of conspiracy to commit bank fraud. What we appeal from, Your Honors, is the restitution order in this case. We had objected to the government's demand for restitution in terms of the amount based on the facts, on the fact that Mr. Moser was not involved with, did not know about the conduct that caused the vast majority of the loss in this case.
But Mr. Moser is present at the creation, basically. He uses his position as a bank officer to promote the loan, even though there's evidence in the record suggesting that had the bank known that he was fronting $30,000 for them to buy the property, and that with the generous interest of 50% on top of that interest that he's going to get from the loan proceeds, 45, as soon as the thing goes through. The bank says we would never have gone ahead with this deal had we known all of that. And so he starts out on a bad foot. And then, you know, I recognize that maybe there's some ambiguity about how he follows it, but he does approve that 15th voucher. It's a trouble for restitution purposes. Why isn't that enough to show that he's in on the deal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that gets us right to the heart of the appeal. As this court's decisions in numerous cases require, the district court here was required to demarcate the scope of the conspiracy that Mr. Moser joined and to determine its substance so that it could trace from that conspiracy the losses that were caused. In this case, I mean, frankly, this case has been haunted for years, and I'm talking about years before it was even brought to indictment, by what is a plain error of law. Mr. Moser, in an act of horrific judgment, and certainly inconsistent with any concept of being a good employee, did in fact lend Mr. Wyan the money to buy the real property.
But before you get too far with this, I understood from your brief anyway that you were saying that there was a misunderstanding that the property was actually encumbered by that loan. But putting that to one side, it's a personal note, it's a gift, it's whatever. It's not really a gift because it was going to be paid back. But without any lien, there's still $30,000 going for the purchase of the property and the promise, as soon as the $780,000 loan comes through, of repaying the 45, the 30 plus the 15, to Mr. Moser. So, and the bank people say, that's material to us. We need to know, you know, what exactly are we financing?
Well, let me just address the bank.
So apart from this error about whether there's a lien or not, it seems to me that's a bit beside the point.
Well, let me, when we say what the bank, when the bank speculates after having to book an almost $700,000 loss and is speaking to an FBI agent assisting the government in prosecuting a case at the end of which will be a restitution order, the bank's assertion that had it known something, it wouldn't have made the loan, does not in and of itself make the fact material.
Why not? Because, I mean, we see evidence like that all the time in cases, whether it's security cases, mm-hmm. whether this kind of case, where the best we can do these number of years after the fact is to ask the victim, and the victim will say, you know, yes, it's material, no, it's not. He could have come in and said, why do you say this is material? Here's some evidence from the industry that shows nobody cares about this fact. You know, is your kid going to college or not? You know, no one really cares. But this isn't that case.
Well, first and foremost, the personal loan memorialized only by a simple note did not, as the briefs indicate, change the availability of the real estate as collateral. It did not.
But it meant that $45,000 of the loan was not going for the purpose that the bank thought it was
certainly
going for.
Well, let me explain why I think that is not necessarily true. 2 points. The bank required formal financial statements as part of the process of approving the loan. The financial documentation that Park provided the bank, assuming they provided to the bank, has never been an issue in this case. The government has never claimed that the debt to Moser, the unsecured debt to Moser, was hidden from the bank, and Moser participated in hiding it from the bank. Either they didn't review the financials, or the financials satisfied them about the economics of the deal.
So, but the government points out in its brief that the package that's presented to the bank shows how much, you know, is for the construction loan. Then there's sort of what's the borrower bringing to the table, assets, soft money, you know, whatever you want to call it, and that's not accurate. It's just not accurate. Well, in a sense, the bank is financing 100%, not the purchase. They didn't know they were financing the purchase of the property. They were told exactly to the contrary.
Well, 2 points. One is, to the extent they were concerned about other liabilities,
they're concerned about where's the loan money going.
Well, and as indicated in docket number 150, the declaration of Philip Hudson, an expert we hired, Exhibit D to that affidavit, as well as, well, let's stick with Exhibit D, it's the closing statement. The first disbursement from this loan included $71,000 in fees to go to Park. So substantially more than necessary to satisfy the loan to Mr. Moser with interest. Presumably, Park, in getting its fees, is permitted to spend that on ping pong balls, on nights on the town, and anything it likes. Those are built into the schedule and budget approved by the bank. That money was available for Park's use as Park saw fit. So the bank knew that $71,000 was going to Park, with Park free to spend it on what Park chose to spend those monies on. But the reality here is the theory the government propounded throughout the case was that the fact that Mr. Moser made the personal loan and didn't blow the whistle on it before the loan was approved rendered false the statement that Park had clear title to the property. That, as a matter of law, isn't true. And we heard it throughout the case. It was repeated in the brief in this court by the government, and it turns up in the ultimate restitution decision, where the district court judge thereby connects Mr. Moser not to bad behavior, not to unethical behavior, but to fraudulent behavior in the origination of the loan. And if we call, I mean, I'm not going to defend Mr. Moser's conduct or judgment in making that personal loan. What I will contend is that it clearly does not constitute, or failure to disclose does not constitute, fraud within the meaning of the bank fraud statute. And this is the problem.
That sounds like a defense. I mean, he's pleaded guilty, right? You know, that's a defense to conviction.
Well, this is a question of law, Your Honor, because and this was the I took the government's theory as they articulated it, because it did not reduce.
But Judge Wood's question is, if this is correct, then the conviction was improper.
No, Your Honor. Because
what does this have to do with the amount of restitution? Or do you think it should be zero or what?
I think it should be $23,000 in change, because the second.
Well, if he didn't commit fraud, why should he?
He did, Your Honor. and he admitted to it. The second fact connecting...
Well, I don't understand.
I'm trying to explain, Your Honor. The second fact...
I thought you just said he didn't commit fraud.
With respect to the loan approval...
But you're conceding he did with respect to the 15th voucher that came his way.
Exactly, Your Honor.
On the, where he lied last, about how complete the project is.
Sure. The last voucher, the voucher for the final disbursement of funds, claimed that the project was nearly complete. By that point, Mr. Moser was aware that it was not. And he was aware that monies were being used for other purposes. He didn't disclose that to the bank. That's fraud. That is his only relationship with fraudulent conduct, even knowledge of fraudulent conduct, and it cost $23,000 in loss. Thank you.
So, Levinson, he starts out with a sweetheart kickback deal, right?
A loan with a high return and lots of bad judgment. Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that? A loan I didn't...
A loan with a high interest payment and lots of bad judgment. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then at the back end, he's aware of these fraudulent payments, right?
At the very end of the events in question.
So that's the arc of this whole transaction, isn't it? Is involvement inappropriate at the front end, inappropriate at the back end, and you just think that's where we should focus?
Well, I think that this court should focus on Mr. Moser's agreement to participate in bank fraud. He behaved deplorably on the front end, but...
Well, he certainly got a sweetheart deal on the probation, didn't he?
Well, everyone got probation in this case.
Well, maybe they all did. I mean, but it's...
Right, the question is...
He's paying, what, $200 a month?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
I think that's the condition.
If I can respond to Your Honor about what happened in the interim, is other defendants systematically created fraudulent draw applications. There is no evidence suggesting Mr. Moser even knew about that, much less...
But he runs out 2 days after this last voucher and tries to create a new loan, which, of course, eventually gets canceled because everybody's wise to him at this point, because they're just still moving on. He still doesn't have enough money to finish the project. Seems like there's a lot...
Well, I think, I mean, Mr. Moser...
This Lighting the Way project where he gets a brand new loan for...
Well, I think when Mr. Moser, it becomes clear to him that this project is going to fail, and that became clear to him only very late in the game, he made some suggestions about how to salvage it, probably...
Get money for Project B, which we can then surreptitiously funnel over to...
I understand, Your Honor. The reality in this circuit is... In a case where there's a plea, such as this case, we look to the conduct that he pled to. It's two things. It's the personal loan, which, as we've discussed, didn't do anything to the economics of the transaction, and it's the 15th fraud, which...
But he pleads to a conspiracy, and so that's where what goes on between point A and point B is actually quite pertinent.
That's right. And what went on, and I think it's undisputed, is other defendants without his knowledge created false draw applications, and other defendants, without his knowledge, forged 5 pre-sale contracts that were a requirement of the loan in the first place, which he didn't know anything about.
How old is this defendant?
Excuse me?
How old is this defendant?
He's in his early 30s, Your Honor. I'm not entirely sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Kraft.
May it please the Court. My name is Carol Kraft. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I represent the government in this case.
So what I want you to tell me about is what makes foreseeable to Mr. Moser the construction contractor's harm. I can see that the bank, you know, wasn't going to get paid, and I can see, you know, the $45,000 or the $23,000, but where do the contractors come in?
Okay. I think that it should be clear from my brief that there was more information in front of the district court than just the information to which the defendant pled guilty. The district court asked the government to file something with a factual basis so that the court could know what his overall involvement was and could determine restitution based on additional facts. And what I filed was, and I referenced in the brief, a memorandum that had attached to it a number of other documents, a number of supporting exhibits that the district court I believe, relied on, because he requested them. And those showed that, A, they included 302 reports from Mr. Woyan, who was the developer, and those showed that Mr. Moser knew from the outset, before he even sought the loan, that Mr. Woyan had no money, that Mr. Woyan, if the project depended in any way on assets from him or Park, that he wouldn't be able to move forward with it. They showed that during the course of the loan, as it went forward, as the project moved along, Mr. Moser approved every single draft that was submitted to the bank. And
so we know that. Why? Because his name is copied on the documents, or do we have testimony that I chatted with Aaron yesterday about this, or what do we have?
I submitted a copy of the first, the sixth, and the 15th draw, and in those are documents that showed that he approved, that they were sent from a title company, looked at the lien waivers, looked at the bills that were submitted by Woyan and Bowles, and they submitted them to Mr. Moser, and he approved them. And one of the things that was evident from the very first draw is that Woyan had changed the construction budget. He had increased the amount of the soft costs. He had decreased the amount of the construction, the hard costs, the actually digging the ground, the laying the foundation, the putting up the walls. Before construction even began, that part of the budget shrank. When they got to the sixth draw, it had shrunk even further, and the soft costs had increased. Clearly, at that point, he either knew or should have known that something was going on with the requests for the money.
Now, I assume that given the nature of this project, this shrinkage of the construction portion just meant that not enough money was going to be available to finish it.
Exactly.
Construction budgets presumably are based on something.
Exactly. Soft costs are the things like the environmental study, the architect's fees, the zoning permits, the things that go along with setting up the project. The hard costs are digging the basement, laying the foundation, putting up the walls, installing the windows, installing the plumbing. And as that budget shrunk, before the project even began, before the construction even began, it had to be obvious to Moser. But beyond that, the reports that were summaries
of shrinkage of the budget is obvious to Moser, and I'm trying to get us now to the contractors. So your line of reasoning, if I understand it correctly, is as the budget shrinks, there's only one of two things you can do. You can build a more modest structure, or you can stiff the contractors and not pay them.
But there's more. The reports that were submitted to the district court that were the summaries of the Woyan statement showed that Woyan told Moser as soon as he realized that they were going to be short on the construction budget. And I want to be candid. He said that at first he didn't tell Moser what the reason was. He just told him that there was going to be a shortage. And immediately Moser began to think of other ways to make up for the shortage, one of which was to get this second loan, the $2.8 million for lighting the ways. But Moyan also said that long before the 15th draw, he told them that one of the reasons for the shortage was the fact that he had been paying money for this other project, for people to develop this other project. And Moser didn't care. Moser continued to work forward the additional loan paperwork, which he submitted to his superiors at State Financial Bank, requesting the $2.8 million, and representing in that loan application that the Fifth and Arthur project had been completed on schedule, that Woyan was bringing $150,000 of his own money as capital to the project, and that he had $600,000...
Let me interrupt for a second. Look, the pre-sentence report recommended the $631,000 in restitution.
It was something like $625,000. There was a discrepancy.
Yeah, okay. Now, is that what the district judge imposed?
Yes.
So what is this about the district judge having collected additional materials? What was that about?
Here's what happened. At the sentencing, Mr. Moser had submitted this report by Mr. Hudson, who he had hired to say that he wasn't really responsible for any loss as a result of his personal loan to Woyan at the beginning of the project, and the fact that the property was purchased actually with the bank's money for the project, and that he should only be responsible for $23,000.
Okay, so the expert is challenging the computation or the...
He's challenging
reasoning
the analysis
the
of how
support.
To set forth the restitution calculation, yes. The district court judge said, I don't want to make a decision based on just this. I want some additional facts. I want the government to file something that gives me some additional facts about what happened. And that's what I'm describing to the court now. Those things that I filed in connection with that memorandum saying, here's what happened in between. He was at the beginning, but he was also at the end, but he was also going along forward. He knew that the money was being misspent, and he was trying to figure out ways.
I don't understand. Having pleaded guilty to conspiracy, why wouldn't that make him liable for all the losses to the victims?
It should.
Well, then what do you need the extra materials for?
I think
he's pleaded guilty to conspiracy.
I think
conspiracy inflicted the harm. The defendants are individually and you know, severally liable, collectively liable. What's it all about?
The court is correct.
Also, I don't understand the pre-sentence report, because it starts off, and I've gotten interested in the probation service. You have to forgive me.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
It starts off by saying that, if he's prosecuted and convicted, he's facing a 30-year prison sentence. That's what starts off. Then it says he has a greedy personality. And then it says, we recommend probation. Then there's no reason given how the 30 years shrank to probation. And what the government says, oh, the others got probation. Why did all these people get probation?
I recommended prison for Woyan and for Bowles, and Woyan got probation. He kind of fell on the sword. I couldn't see recommending prison for Moser when Woyan, who's
case,
really,
granted, more money involved in the previous case. Roughly a tenth as much. But there, the government said, oh, we wanted 20 years. Here we want probation, apparently. Or you say, no, you wanted...
I didn't ever recommend
the disparity seems very strange.
No, in the previous case, the prosecutor would have...
What was recommended, in following up on Judge Posner's inquiry, what did you recommend for the other defendants?
We recommended a guideline sentence for Woyan, for sure, and I don't remember where he fell in the guidelines. And if the court is familiar with the white-collar guidelines, they aren't necessarily ever very high. But I did recommend a guideline sentence for Woyan. He got a probationary sentence, I believe, with home confinement.
Were you the prosecutor on all four?
Yes.
And you don't recall whether you recommended prison for all four? Or which ones?
I recommended prison for Woyan. Balderas was a different case. Balderas had end-stage liver disease and diabetes and other kinds of things that were... He was the person who created the fake documents at the beginning of the loan. I did not recommend prison for him. Mm-hmm. I think I recommended prison for Bowles. I can't remember if Bowles was sentenced before or after Moser. Moser's sentence was... my recommendation was consistent with what I thought was fair in light of what Moyan got. But the issue here isn't whether or not he should have gone to prison. The issue is whether or not he should be held responsible for the full 20...
We're aware of that. We're just trying to get a little sense of the history of the court. What's the restitution on the others?
Moser and Woyan and Bowles were all held responsible for the $625,000.
No, I understand that. Mr. Moser's got $200 a month. What's the restitution on the other?
The schedule?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I assume that it's probably similar. I think that the court...
Are these people without means? Is that what we have?
I think they're all like Mr. Moser. I think that they're all people, with the exception of Mr. Balderas, who are capable of working, who have some skills, who have the ability, I see my time is up, but who have the ability to pay some restitution. I would submit that $200 a month is not unreasonable for somebody like Mr. Moser, and that nothing about this restitution order was an abuse of discretion. It was a proper order under the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act and the facts of the case, and I would ask that the court affirm the order.
All right, thank you. Your time had expired, Mr. Levinson, but I'll give you 1 minute. Please stick to that.
Mr. Moser does not dispute that parties to a conspiracy are jointly and severally liable for the losses caused by that conspiracy. As this court has held in Locke and other cases, a sentencing judge must demarcate the scope of the conspiracy that a particular defendant joined before sentencing that defendant. Here, we've gone from he facilitated an affirmative lie in the application for the loan. Two, he knew or should have known there was no money, knew or should have known it was...
you're not saying he pleaded guilty to a different conspiracy from the others.
I'm saying...
Are you? Are you saying that?
I believe Mr. Moser...
Are you saying that, yes or no, that he joined a different conspiracy?
I believe Mr. Moser joined a different conspiracy or an additional conspiracy than some of the others did. Yes, I believe there were multiple conspiracies in this case.
Did you argue that to the sentencing judge?
What we argued to the sentencing judge, and I wasn't as involved as I am right now, was that conduct with which Mr. Moser was not involved and about which he did not know was caused most of the losses. It was
same so not way reasonably getting, foreseeable.
Same place. Last point is, again, the declaration of Mr. Hudson contains the agreement whereby Cadre Development was the responsible party for looking over draw applications, potentially inspecting the property, at which point it went to Wisconsin Title, which sent those applications to Moser with a direction to either pay the application or not. Mr. Moser played no affirmative role in the evaluation of those applications. That's a matter of record. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.